Life sure gets busy, doesn't it? Well, we understand. With all the certifications you have, finding the right kind of continuing education that fits your schedule can be a real challenge. That's where the FlightBridge Ed podcast subscription comes in. For less than $5 a month, the FlightBridge Ed podcast subscription gives you top-notch accredited CE while you listen. Visit FlightBridgeEd.com for more information or to sign up today. The FlightBridge Ed podcast subscription, another way we're being your partner in discovery.
The content of this podcast is based on medical fact and evidence-based practice from credible authoritative sources, but is not a substitute for your institution's policies, procedures, common sense, or good judgment. The views and opinions are those of Eric Bauer and FlightBridge Ed in their entirety. This is the FlightBridge Ed Podcast, critical care and emergency medicine education for nurses and paramedics. Here's your host, Eric Bauer.
Hey everybody, Eric back with you. Hey, I just wanted to take a second before we jump into this podcast to say thank you for an amazing 2019. If you joined us and came to our booth at EMS World Expo in New Orleans or met us at AMTC or we got to meet you at one of our 32 review classes this year, truly amazing. Met a lot of amazing people. We just want to say thank you. I want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart. I also want to announce we did just release the Fast 20 tickets. If you're looking for a conference that is going to completely blow your mind, something that's going to inspire you, something that you are going to leave and go, man, that was truly amazing, check it out. We did announce the ticket release. As I said, we have the pre-conferences all out. They are going to be truly amazing. Speaker lineup is world-class. Highly recommend to check it out. And lots of different opportunities within the Fast 20 program. So let's get into the case. As the title alluded to, this is going to be a home delivery that has gone bad. So we're going to jump into the whole aspect of neonatal and newborn resuscitation. I think it's always a case that we should look at from the aspects of core resuscitation points that NRP, PALS, stable, pediatric fundamentals of critical care support highlight. And I think we should have cases like this to look at because we know that these are high stress cases. These are cases that I don't think anybody loves to go on, and the stress level is always to the maximum. So let's jump in. We have a 38-week gestation infant that was delivered by midwife. You have a paramedic EMT team that has two BLS firefighters that have responded with them. Pretty quick response time, just a couple of minutes. Mom is Gravita 2, Para 2 at this point. Initial assessment, the child was acrocyanotic. APGAR score based on their initial primary assessment is 2, and I'm going to go through that. They noted no meconium. Mom did good prenatal care. There was no complications during pregnancy or the delivery. But at this point, the baby is not doing very well. So let's look at this APGAR. APGAR of 2, as I said, and the reason why they gave the APGAR 2 is when we look at number 1, heart rate was less than 100. Was approximately 55. So we got a score of 1. Respiratory rate was absent, muscle tone flaccid, reflex irritability, nothing to note, and skin color, as I said, was acrocyanotic. So that's where we get an APGAR of 2. So we have that initial primary assessment. We need to then proceed to step 2, and that's going to be immediate positive pressure ventilation. We know that NRP guidelines states that if the baby is greater than 35 weeks gestation, we always use 21% FiO2 for that initial 30 to 60 seconds. Resuscitation of the newborn less than 35 weeks, we can go from 21 room air to 30%. This baby obviously falls greater than 35 weeks. So they perform positive pressure ventilations for 30 to 45 seconds. They note no improvement with heart rate. We want to make sure that we have a good mask seal, that we have a good open airway, that we have padding under the torso. All those things were verified. So at this point, what do? We go right to CPR. We go to chest compressions, and we want to make sure those chest compressions are fast. We want to make sure that there's enough time to completely allow recoil. And they note within 30 to 60 seconds of chest compressions, the heart rate does improve to over 100 beats per minute. So we got to also remember that in most cases, you should always allow at least 30 seconds of ventilations. Make sure that you have a good mass seal. If you've escalated to intubation because of severe meconium staining, again, make sure that that ET tube is confirmed. They note that this child is about 4 kilos. So 4 kilos, and they escalated at this point. They have a good heart rate, and they went right to intubation because this baby had no respiratory drive. So what ET tube would you use? Well, a really good, easy trick outside of using a weight-based guide. Always use a weight-based guide, obviously, but if you're just doing something on the fly, you want to grab an ET tube that's going to be probably pretty close, is look at their weeks in gestation. We call that post-conceptual age. So this baby is 38 weeks post-conceptual age. We would move the decimal point back one, so it would be a 3.8. Obviously, we don't have that, so either go down, which is what I would recommend, go down to a 3.5 and use that. Works really, really well. They intubate the baby with no problems. Baby has no gag reflex per se. We want to make sure we confirm that with end-tidal CO2 waveform capnography. We want to make sure we also confirm that with a good depth. And it should be 3 times that ET tube size. That means that that depth is going to be, at right around, so we're 10.5. So right around there, we want to secure that at the gum line. Something that's not going to move. What do we assess now? We have good end-tidal CO2 waveform capnography. We now need to secure that ET tube. And now let's look at the SpO2. SpO2 currently is 85%. So is that adequate? Well, as I said, this was a pretty quick response time. They got on scene right after delivery. So let's talk about the SpO2 and really look at the discussion points. The first thing we have to understand is 85%, if we said the baby was born 5 minutes ago, that is absolutely perfect. That is not a hypoxic number. So when we look at NRP guidelines, we know that we want the lowest amount of O2 based on a ductal SpO2 after birth. That means that that pre-ductal SpO2 has to be right hand, right wrist, right extremity. At 1 minute, that SpO2 is 60 to 65%, and that is perfectly normal. We would treat that, or maybe consider treating that, at less than 60%. But I want to caution you. I want to caution you to look at what is normal for a baby in utero. A baby in utero has an SpO2 probably less than 60%. At 2 minutes, it is fine if they're between 65 and 70. At 3, 75, 70 to 75 is appropriate. At 4, 75 to 80, and so on. So at 5 minutes, 80 to 85% is adequate. We would only treat that at less than 80%. Well, they've already intubated this patient. They did that because there was no respiratory drive. Heart rate has improved to over 100. They have it documented at about 110 at this point. And so, do we use room air or do we turn our FiO2 up? Well, here's the key. Use room air. There's no need to attach that BVM to an oxygen source at this point. That SpO2 is absolutely appropriate. Why do we care about this? Well, there's a few reasons, and I could go into a long podcast on this if you want to look this up. There are many, many complications that can arise from that hyperoxygenated state in that newborn. Usually a preemie, a neonate less than 31 weeks is where you're going to have more of the problems. But any papers that highlight this have said basically this. Pulse oximetry studies in healthy term preterm infants who are not requiring resuscitation. Now, I guess you could look at this baby and say, all right, does this baby classify as a resuscitative baby? I don't know. They had a rate that was low, bradycardic, acrocyanosis was present, no respiratory drive, so could be. But that SpO2s, again, are standardly less than 60 at birth, and that it takes 10 to 15 minutes to even reach 85 to 90%. So current guidelines are, as I said, 21% for term infants, oxygen supplementation should be guided by that preductal SpO2. And I think this baby is doing just fine at this point based on that. We got to remember that the heart is changing at this point, that this baby has had a high pressure right side, a low pressure left side, has a hole between the right and left atrium called the foramen of Ovale, and has a patent ductus that is a branch from the pulmonary artery to the aorta. That patent ductus is going to start closing once they breathe oxygen. That needs to close slowly. We don't want to speed that up. And oxygenation is what stimulates that closure. It's been shown that babies, even term babies, have retinal capillaries that are immature, they're underdeveloped. And these high oxygenation states actually can cause damage and cause retinal detachment. So again, when we look at this, a lot of these problems have been shown to happen more to the preemie, but I think it's safest, and that's why NRP has taken this guideline and used it for all babies up to term, that we just want to make sure that we're honoring and looking at that lowest SpO2 based on minutes after birth. At this point, we would want to reassess our Apgar score. Remember, Apgars are going to be at that 1 minute, now 5, 10, etc. So when we look at this Apgar score, baby has improved significantly. Heart rate is going to be greater than 100, so that's 2 points. Respiratory rate is still absent, so we have 0 there, so we're at 2 points total. Muscle tone, some flexion of the extremities was noted, so we have now 3 points. There is a little bit of grimace, no cry, so that's 4 points, and the baby is still showing that acrocyanotic skin color, so that is now another point. So we have 2, we have 3, 4, 5, so we have an Apgar at this point of 5, so definitely have an improvement at that 5 minute mark. What do we do now? Now we need to identify what is the best option for IV access. We have 3 options. We can go a peripheral IV, which I feel has been a successful area for me in these newborns, where we've been able to get, you know, ACs. You can definitely go to an IO, or you could go an UVC cannulation. The thing that I just want to make sure we understand, we do UVCs in practice. We do these in simulation labs. My experience, they're not as easy. And again, just my experience, they're not as easy. Maybe I've just had some tough situations, but we have been successful though with peripheral IVs. So go with what you know, go with what you're comfortable with. This crew opted to go right to an IO, and I think that's absolutely a great choice. And so make sure that you're using your good landmarks, make sure that you're performing that procedure correctly. At this point, IO access is now confirmed, and we need to assess our patient. Don't forget that these kids are going to get cold very, very fast. They have no insulating fat. Their hypothalamus is not functioning to the point that it will. It's very immature, hasn't kickstarted yet. So these kids have a very large body surface area, and they're going to lose heat very rapidly. So make sure that this baby has been stimulated, has been dried. Any wet towels have been removed. The baby is covered, head, feet. Obviously, you're going to have this baby uncovered while the whole resuscitation is taking place, and that's where you're going to lose a lot of heat. So consideration of making sure the ambulance is heated up before you load this patient up, and you probably at this point need to be taking a few seconds to talk to your crew and make sure that you have the transport mode, where you're going to go, confirming that with the parents, confirming that with the midwife, and have a plan to start moving towards the ambulance. Now we need to look at vital signs. And vital signs are always something that we have in the past looked at from the PAL standpoint as what is the heart rate based on this baby? And I think that's great. And we focus our attention on heart rate based on the initial resuscitation of making sure that it's greater than 100. But do we worry about a blood pressure? Well, when you start taking other courses, NRP, stable, Pediatric Fundamentals of Critical Care Support is another one. We learn that blood pressure is important, but really specifically up to 44 weeks gestation, or what we say 44 weeks post-conceptual age, we want to look at a MAP. And their MAP should be equal to their weeks in gestation. So this baby is 38 weeks post-conceptual age. We would have to need a minimum MAP of 38. If that MAP is less than 38, then we would escalate to fluid boluses at 10 mils per kilo. We would go, you know, three, reassess at that point. But remember, you don't stop at three. If that MAP was less than 38, and you've given three boluses of 10 mils per kilo, you would do another bolus and do another bolus. You continue to bolus this baby until you have an appropriate MAP. They documented a MAP that was appropriate, so it was greater than 38. So at that point, I think it's important that we look at this from, again, do we check another APGAR score? Are we at the 10-minute mark? Or can we start moving towards the ambulance and get this baby moving to a definitive facility? Consideration also needs to be taken for, do you transport the mom and baby together? Is that going to be the best thing? I think in this case, because baby is intubated, the baby is being resuscitated, that's probably not going to be the case. And so that needs to be discussed with the midwife and with the parents, and that is going to be probably one of those emotional moments. So let's say we've moved to the ambulance, we're in that transport mode now. Now we need to take a second to reassess that APGAR score. So reassessing the APGAR score again, at this point, we have heart rate greater than 100, so that's 2 points. We have, again, very minimal, slow, irregular respirations at this point. They documented that the baby took 5 spontaneous breaths, so we'll give them an APGAR of 1 for respiratory rate. We have 2 for the heart rate, so we're at a 3 total. The active motion improved, so we have another 2, so now we're at 5. We have really no grimace or a little bit of grimace, so that's 6. And the baby is pinking up, so that is going to be a 7, 8. So we're at 8. So we're still seeing improvement. We're about 12 minutes in, and we are moving towards a definitive facility. What do we do now? We have to consider the whole fluid maintenance. In the fluid maintenance, what we do is we use a 4-2-1 calculation formula. The 4-2-1 rule is very, very simple. Essentially, 4 mils multiplied by the first 10 kilos of their weight, 2 mils multiplied by whatever their weight falls between 10 and 20 kilos, and 1 mil multiplied by whatever is above 20. Well, they noted in their charting that this baby was a 4-kilo baby. So we're going to go 4 times 4 is 16. We have nothing above 10 kilos. So the 2 and the 1 part of the 4-2-1 rule does not matter in this case. So this baby is going to get 16 mils per hour. If you have the capability, the baby should be getting a D5 half or quarter normal saline. If you don't have that available, you can just start, you know, an isotonic fluid. 16 mils is not going to be a lot, but they do need for long-term fluid maintenance a sugar solution. Now we need to check a sugar. That sugar is going to be something that should be done pretty immediate. That sugar, based on their assessment, was 69. You would treat that if it was less than 40, and you would use D10 and give usually 1 mil per kilo is going to be the standard dose. Now let's reassess. And this is reassess based on the stable reassessment algorithm. Number one, sugar. We have assessed that. It's at 69. Temperature. We're going to continue to check temperatures, make sure that we have an appropriate temperature, make sure we're really guarding against that heat loss. Airway is secure. We have good end-tidal CO2 waveform capnography confirming that ET tube is in place. Make sure you consistently look at the measurement based on where we were at the gums, 3 times that tube size. Breathing, well, we know that based on their documentation, there was 5 spontaneous breaths during transport. L is labs, right? This is going to be a pre-hospital case, so no, there's no labs other than the glucose. And emotional support. That emotional support is going to be essential. Parents, one of the parents, probably the dad, traveling with. Mom's going to have to probably stay behind to be transported by another crew. Heart rate was documented consistently between 105 and 110. And so let's talk about this. If you ever were to do a 12 lead on a baby, you know, not really sure why that would happen, but we have to understand when we look at a newborn baby that they should always be in right axis deviation. And that's because when they're in utero, they're a high pressure right side. As I said before, once they're born, they should still be a high pressure right side, but that's slowly flipping. Pretty rapidly, you're going to start seeing that baby switch to a normal axis deviation. And that's because the left side becomes the high pressure side, foraminal valve, the hole between the right and left atrium closes, and we now have a high pressure left side, and that's where you're going to see that axis switch to a normal axis. As I've alluded to in other podcasts, we should never see a left axis deviation. That's going to always make you think about a outflow obstruction heart defect. I will go into that in other podcasts. So a right axis deviation and that initial assessment is going to be absolutely normal. So during transport, they noted the SpO2s came up to about 91, 92%. As I said, baby took about 5 spontaneous breaths. Apgar scores continued to improve. End-tidal CO2s were right around 45 to 50, 55 in some cases. They took this baby to a receiving facility. Management was continued, and the baby did very well. So this podcast was basically highlighting a case that thousands of you have had. These are high-stress situations. We have to really think about these core resuscitation points, go systematically. I think it's always best to stay on scene. I think when you look at the whole Hantevi system, you look at Peter Hantevi and his push for pediatric resuscitation, it has been proven, stay on scene, get the main resuscitation points taken care of, and then once that is done, move to the ambulance. So that is very, very important. And I think that is definitely a mindset change for me and how I was taught to take this child to an ambulance first, and you have a delay in that initial resuscitation. I can't stress it enough. The babies that I have had, they lose heat so fast. So really, really guard against that heat loss the best you can. I know it's difficult. It is so hard. And I think that when you look at this case overall, I think they did a phenomenal job. Hopefully this case is enlightening. It's good review for us to always look at a neonatal case or a newborn case. And just remember the core points that we need to focus on in these high stress calls. As I said, check out the Fast 20 page, and we will talk to you soon.
This has been a production of the Flight Bridge Ed Podcast, leading the way in pre-hospital critical care and emergency medicine education.